In a recent interview I read about Mary Moore's chapbook, Eating the Light, she said, "Only after the poem exists do I see what it might be saying. Poetry is a way of discovery for me, not an after-the-fact recording of insight. Poetry is the insight," which I thought was a great way of looking at the poetry writing process, as well as a theme that manifests itself in her work. Moore's poetry is haunting with a certain gothic sensibility. It's not frightening, but it is thrilling. The sentences in her poems read with a ballet-like elegance, like a fairy tale in slow motion. There's a focus on existence, on the world as it is, offered up with cupped hands to both speaker and reader. In one of her poems called Red, vivid detail of flowers and the natural world mixes with pensive yet astute observations of family and friends. In one particularly beautiful section, she writes how zinnias' hot button centers, neon pink, vermilion, and red-orange, hold yellow spires hollowed like straws made for bees. The dazzling is abuzz with their urgency. Her poetry has appeared in Georgia Review, American Poetry Journal, Field, Prairie Schooner, and many others. Her full-length collections are The Book of Snow and Flicker, which won the Dogfish Head Poetry Award. She's also included in Eyes Glowing at the Edge of the Woods, Fiction and Poetry from West Virginia. A retired professor of Renaissance literature, she taught poetry, Shakespeare, and writing at Marshall University. Please help me in welcoming Mary Moore.
Thank you so much. That was just beautiful. I'll be reading a bit from both books, Eating the Light and Flicker, and if I have time, I'd like to end with a little bit of new work. Eating the Light is a chapbook, and one thing, let me check before I go into some stuff that might not be relevant. How many of you are writers? No surprise. Well, as I don't know what poems are about until I've written them, I don't know what a poetry collection is until it starts glomming other poems to itself and it throws some off and it gets new ones. And often what emerges is surprising. And Eating the Light is like that. I had some of these poems for 10 years and others were written more recently. But one that catalyzed the entire process and let me see what was going on is a poem about the painter J.M.W. Turner. Turner was deeply influential on the Impressionists. He's one of the first painters that painted light. And he was also obsessed with the sun. And he painted, this particular poem is about a gunship called the Fighting Temeraire, which was Admiral Nelson's, who was a big deal. And so it was very important, this painting, this boat. Turner's son. Turner must have hungered for light's devouring glory. Even in the forlorn repose of Nelson's ship, the Fighting Temeraire, eons of fire, of light, have turned the gunship's prow beige and white, ash and urn. Sails furled, the banished ship fades and faints, almost mirage, though it dwarfs the blackened towboat in the foreground. Opaque as the coal it burns, the tug is thick with paint, dense with what is not light, like an iron shoe. It smokes a red-brown plume, its engine, like the sun's, is hunger. At the horizon, low in the painting's right quadrant, decentered center perches the sun. arcs of conflagration rise from it, vermilion, lead red, crimson, for it is a star's near fire. But the disk itself is not red or lemon or chrome yellow, but wan as the vanishing gunny, white as the host held up at mass, the Christ of the devouring light. The title of Eating the Light has to do with both light eating us and us eating the world that we see via light. And so for those of you who are grad students, I think you'll hear flavors of post-colonial theory and feminism in some of the poems, most obviously in this first one, Colonizing Eyes. The world shows its hand all at once, a spill of tangerines, mangoes, nectarines, to the table's wheat and earth-hued grain, which ripples the receiving. Even the straw gold cornucopia's a sign of plenitude. We are meant to think fruit trees breed for my delight. Looking, I swallow orbs of orange and peach blush red, puckered stem holes, oblation of rounded line to rounder things. Eating, I fill out. The caught light anoints my arms in swaths. I'm oiled and muscled, cut like circus strongmen. There's no need for stealth, only strength. The world is ripe for my taking. Even the birds think ripe thoughts, round-bodied, embowered like fruit. Magnified, the paint strokes V'd symmetrically, make feathers like miniature pines. Each bird is nearly a landscape, such orderly coats of gloss and reverie. While there's some thinking behind these poems, there is also, I would say, great indulgence of the senses. At second sight, which I think doesn't necessarily have more to do with the senses than anything else, I just have that line that I wanted to throw out. At second sight. So Sir Francis Drake discovered San Francisco Bay, even though a zillion Native Americans had lived there for 1,000 years. At second sight, not a zillion, but some. At second sight, white-hooded death's head angel Amanitas and apricot-colored chanterelle say, eat us. But the Pomos, who lived here first, knew both poisonous and edible crops grew here, like Newfoundland sheep wool on wet weather, like the fog-fed redwoods which feathered places cap. Even now, in full sun or fog bound, the bay from air is weird, squid-bodied, both urban and wild-sided, its troth to earth, not man, is clear. It breathes truths like the lighthouse, a nuevo año spit, which says, here's beauty's bedrock, watch out. Think of it at second sight. What did Drake think of rhododendrons and trees whose wood is pink? I'm actually not just randomly flipping through here. See, I have little post-its, but of course, now that I'm up here, I'm going, oh, do I really want to read that one? Maybe I want to read this one. Chimera. You were panning your camera the old fashioned box with one eye that's also a nose, a chimera of seeing, being seen. Pardon me. Sorry, this is a do-over. Chimera, your panic. You are panning your camera, the old-fashioned box with one eye that's also a nose, black, a chimera of seeing being seen. But you have suavely done with it now. Magician emerging from the black curtain on the back, you comb your hair sleek as cap, as the patent leather shoes I tap danced in. You've entombed the two palm trees and me in celluloid. I am so flat now, you cannot enter or disclose me. I cannot eat soul or poise for a dive or beach walk and see the sea's Coke bottle green curlers unroll in rhythms of sevens. I'm sheer as your eyes salt film. But there's also a sense of, in this book, of particularly women evading sight. Woman seated on stairs. Gray oxides of sky. Leaf-toothed moon. Venus's star, fritillary white on a notched edge. You influence it all. The stairs and the door, the slope to the west, your silhouette refusing to drown in things. One dimension is undisclosed. The fourth is resistance to sidewalks and mortuary columns and the pure sense of being singular but more, an aura as if skin were the phantom and jumpy translucence of flame. It loosely bounds you, integrating around the spine. The flexible ivory from which flesh and wish radiate. The behavior of muscle, bone, tendon, the language skin distinguishes. You are these incongruent vectors. The dicey idea of being human, no omen the painter might hint at, no dominion. John, can I borrow a handkerchief? John Gilkind, my husband. A philosopher. Flicker, as Marianne kindly said, won the Dogfish Head Award this year. Not a major, not, you know, like the National Book Awards, but wow, the judges were like Carol Frost, Jan Beatty, and Baron Wurmser, so I'm very happy. Flickr seems, again, remembering how collections for me come to mean something as they accrue poems. Flickr is especially that way. It has poems that were 6 months old at the time it was published, and poems, one poem is 20 years old. 85 zillion revisions later, that poem made it into this book. Flickr, if I have to say what it's about, seems to explore endurance and loss in family and nature. That's so reductive. So I'll try to make it a little less reductive by pointing out how flickering light both endures and goes away at the same time, and how, in the same way, families and nature endure, but they also endure through loss, and perhaps they endure because of loss. The book starts out with the actual bird flicker. The flicker on the windowsill, cap thumbprinted, Carmen Miranda red, chest a grid of spots on white, tricked me. Long beaked, thick necked, its sides singed mauve and mourning dove brown, I thought it broke the species box, anomaly. A dove, impossible to be. Besides, flicker implied little tiny Tom Thumb-sized doings that licked around peripheries like butterflies, liquored vagaries echoed. No such thing. Chest metal in rows, back bronze, sheen cupric. He's adorned from inside, a straight shooter. He's wholly himself, effulgence and pith, anchored in fact. Then he flickers to red oak, his cap and chest bar a blur, and vanishes, leaving the sleeve of detail he's emptied, and a verb. Despite that ending, it took me like years to realize it was kind of about language. And so here's another poem that typifies what I was saying about flickering as being about endurance and loss. Watercolor Woman. Your thinning hair has the look of wishes. Even your skin is riddled with white space, a fiction. And your arms, flesh-colored wash, is wishing, too, to rise and fall, embrace and release. But you do only the slow taper toward peripheries, elapse, fade. Perhaps you already knew, as the painter laid down the fiction, the fear of being only this thin layer, a memory of drifting into wainscoted walls, claw-footed dresser, things that seemed wholly material, dense with being. Your intermittence is like a muscle's fibrillation, a flickering. It embodies you, like us, as both endurance and loss. The center of this book is about family. And a whole lot of dysfunction. I know that's a shock. Poet, dysfunctional family? Oh, never. Cosmology of the Irish Mother. The energy of worry sustains the universe. Like Mother Turtle, who bears the worlds on her back through indigo rivers of space in parchment maps of the cosmos. Or like gravity's force that fixes stars in their orbits, but like the mother's allure for the wandering toddler draws us also to Earth. The stones of worry in our pockets, the weight of darkness in our shoes. Farewell, you say, as morning bears us off on its dream of action like a dangerous horse. Don't let the shadows leak into your shoes. Wear your medallions, your waterproofs, your opaque hat. Even the radio voice of the rosary cannot console you. As you sit in the yellow cone of lamplight, embroidering your tapestry of worry, where all the leaves are eyes, You do not believe that the floodwaters you've dreamed still flow through their memorized channels, that around the white imaginary pole, the wings of the swan, the starry cross still open like a soul's. Metamorphosis. Even when he'd gone, the leaves of the black red roses my father grew sowed shadow spots like the leopards whose worn skin you evoked when I urged you to change, to do, or move. You savored old saws, and at night, whiskey's crescent bobbing on the table's blood red mahogany. Drunk, you could talk. Words, a boat you steered through shoals of the unspoken, over the table's polished bays where you peered and saw your life, the whiskey's dim shining on wood. Your father philandered, you said once, relishing the alliteration. Whiskey's amber lens colored all your world. Somehow this trajectory is different than I imagined. We started kind of up, now we're going down, and we're coming to On My Mother's Suicide. Haint of talk and sulk, saint of don't and won't, you never quite forgot, never forfeited, worry the gnaw you owned. You died of null and none, hip bone broken, woman bowl broken. You honed appetite to none, burrowed into nowhere's nothing bed. Now you walk at night, not in a white gown, dark hair a burl of worry, pale hands ringing, fingers ringed for vow and vowel, O for zero, O for no. I hold your ashes, silk and grit, shadow of wish and flesh, and still I jilt you, who taught me not too well. And will I, nil I, follow you, zero hunger without a home. Goner, you got me in the end. Your sea teal eyes, your worry dice, the swollen knuckle bones. I wear your musk, your never quite, your mole and nix. I changed a word in that poem because not N-A-U-G-H-T sounds like N-O-T and K-N-O-T. Anyway, it was N-A-U-G-H-T, not K-N-O-T. So how do you survive writing poems about horror and grief? I'm not claiming this poem has an answer, but it's the last poem in the book. And anyway, I'll just read it. Reading red. Leaf mulch brown birds, cigars with wings, dive bomb the feeder. A glass throat the sand beige seeds pour through. Two cardinals fly past performing stunts. Wings tipped to say, we're what red is, read us. Even freckled pewter and plowed field browns of mourning doves mean only this, we are. The doves mourn nothing, eating seeds, bobbing, surpassing speech as stars on toothed leaves do. Heavens, a rhododendron red robe no angelic chorus can unsay. We word every accident. Wrens are events and the rarest birds oratorios. We mouth syllables like seeds, saying praises. Pardon me. I'm laughing as I blow my nose. I want to end on I started to say an up note, but even these aren't quite an up note. I have a persona named Amanda who appears in Eating the Light. And she appeared, that poem in Eating the Light is 8 years old. And suddenly, about 2 years ago, she came back. And I have to point this out, not that you wouldn't pick it up, but since I'm reading to you, you're not reading on the page. Amanda has man in the middle of it. Amanda and the man's soul. Amanda likes the mandolin's twang. She also likes a good man and has one inside her, says Carl Jung. Her mantra is Amanda, man, Amanda. She suns today, listens to bluegrass, tans and forgets about the little man. She is reading Jung. She is not who you think she is. She's just blackened her spiked hair and bathes herself in aloe to soothe her fresh tats, her arm cuts, not to imply she's unhealthy. Amanda thinks the man lives in her chest. She'd like to evict him, cut him out, but where would he go? Jung says the man inside is her soul, the sexes crossed. She's his hidey hole. Amanda never hides. The sun's on the book on her lap. It's hot in her jet black hair. She'd like a sturdy girl soul, thick knuckled, chin squared, feet splayed from working the soil, two-souled. She'd play mandolin for its moods, both lyric and bold. But Amanda's stuck with the middleman. He thumps in her chest like iambs. And one more Amanda poem. Quite contrary. Up at 6, hair gelled and spiked by 6:05, I say my morning mantra to mirror me. It's okay to be me, okay to be me, okay to be me. I dot my eyelids day glow blue, pull up my Levi's 505s, loop mother's pearls around my black crew neck tee. I like a mixed diction. Already dressed, the downy woodpecker the size of my hand works his way up the walnut tree. His red cap bobs up, down, up, down. His back's barred black and white, decked out like the Baltimore Catechism's black and white milk bottles, illustrating states of the soul, grace or sin. Uncontrite, he inclines up the branch so fast priests can't catch him. Anyway, he's both and, not either or. Contraries married and capped with a claim. He pauses, pecks at beetle stalk, larval plenty, then flicks up, down, left, right to the next ripe spot. Black eyes, white rimmed, he's a small spectacle, bespectacled, which is why I like the whim and festival of him. I mime him, one footed hop, hit Bob, then finish my caps with, finish my lips with Downy Cap Red. Thank you very much.